This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today is John Burge with USDA's Farm Service Agency. We talk about ERP in just a moment. First off, ranking member, Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman.
Well, I think we've actually stabilized a little bit now that we've got the new speaker in place. The hope is that we can go forward and really start working on some of the problems that you described. The debt, the deficit, in other words, we have a $33 trillion debt, but we're also running these $1 trillion-plus deficits every year, adding to the debt. And so spending really is something that we have to control. It's okay to borrow some money, but it gets to the point where it becomes unhealthy, and we're approaching that right now. So that's going to take everybody working together, and at some point we're going to need to tighten things up and go from there.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by John Burge. John is Acting Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs with the Farm Service Agency at USDA in Washington, D.C. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Okay, a little background about you and your pathway to USDA. Did it start on a farm?
It sure did. My dad ran a corn and wheat operation north of Lisco, Nebraska, which is a little tiny town out west. And when I was about 8 years old in the very early 1980s, we lost that place, like so many did. And I think that's sort of what drove me into public service. As I grew up and as I spent time, considering what my family went through, I got involved in public policy, worked for few different members of Congress, and eventually made my way into ag policy and ultimately here at USDA. This is my now third stint with USDA. I worked during the Obama administration in the secretary's office and then in congressional relations, and then also was the state executive director for the Farm Service Agency in the Clinton administration many years ago, and now I'm back. I came back as a state executive director again in Nebraska, and then they had a need for somebody to help out running farm programs, and I am here serving in this capacity as an acting deputy administrator and enjoying it quite a little bit.
Okay, so from a SED perspective, really, you get what happens at that county level and the county level offices and at the state level offices whenever there's a program that's initiated by USDA or the Farm Service Agency. How important are those staff members at the local level?
Oh my goodness, the people that we have that work for us are just the cream of the crop. They are so vitally important to being a bridge between, policy that's developed in Washington and how that impacts their operation at the ground level. You know, a lot of our programs are really important, just like the one we're going to talk about today, related to disasters, things outside of a producer's control. And being able to interact with a human being at that countertop in one of our 2,200-plus county offices around the country is important to those producers and their families. These are the people that they go to church with, maybe their kids go to school with, maybe they see at the Little League baseball game, and they have a trust. And our employees have that trust with them as well. I don't think there's a person that works for the Farm Service Agency that doesn't have, at least an arm's length tie to the land or an arm's length tie to production agriculture. So they understand both the good times and the bad times, and I think that they are just critical. We certainly have that here in Nebraska. I know that extends all over the country.
You know, we have a lot of acronyms, especially when it comes to ag, USDA, FSA. Let's throw another acronym in there, ERP, Emergency Relief Program 2022. Announcement on that. What can you tell us?
Well, so the Emergency Relief Program, this is essentially the third iteration of this program. We had a program called Emergency Relief Program 1, ERP 1, which was for losses back in 2020. And then we had a second program called ERP 2 for losses in 2021. This one is for losses incurred in year 2022. And we just announced this on October 27th. It's a $3 billion program. Now, I want your listeners to keep in mind that that $3 billion is short. We knew it was going to be short. We had about $10 billion in losses. We had about $3 billion that we were allocated to put into this program. And the design here is to help offset financial impacts of yield losses and value losses, revenue losses, from qualifying disaster events. Now, those could be anything from wildfire to flooding to hurricanes to derechos. You know, we had a tremendous amount of loss in 2022, just as we've seen thus far here in 2023. Those weather challenges are now, I think, in the third year in a row. Depending on where you're at in the country, it could be more like the fourth or fifth year in a row. But this was an opportunity for us to get some additional resources into people's hands so that they could offset some of those losses. We built upon some of the successes that we had in the first couple of iterations of the emergency relief program. We are using pre-filled applications for Track 1. Pre-filled applications work very well in ERP 1. These are applications that are mailed direct to the producer. Producer essentially certifies what is on those pre-filled applications. These are based on losses that were covered by crop insurance or are disaster non-insured assistance program, commonly known as NAP, at USDA. Now, I want to clarify with that, people don't have to wait for those pre-filled applications in their mailbox. They can go into their county office if they think that they've incurred a loss that would qualify, and we could pull up that application in the office. The pre-filled application being mailed is sort of a backstop to that. In addition to that, we're running two different tracks, and the tracks are running concurrently. So you can apply for both, and you can apply for both at the same time. The second track is designed, this is a revenue-based model, and it's designed to deal with some of those issues related to what are called shallow losses. We had that some of that feedback from producers very early on in the process in the last ERP program. And the ERP factor on that track two increases up to 90% for insured crops, and that is to help address that non-indemnified loss or shallow loss not covered by crop insurance, which we also think is a good addition to that. Now, both of those tracks are going to be implemented at the same time. Producers may be eligible for both, and they're able to apply for both at the same time. And the sort of resounding theme here is if there's questions about this, all they've got to do is go in and talk to those county staff in their local county office, and they can walk them through how to get into the program, whether they have any questions about what might be on their pre-filled application and that sort of thing. I will mention also, Tony, that there's been some discussion about this, that because we're about a third of what we need in terms of the losses out there, we've got to do our very best to spread that those resources to producers across the board. And one of our efforts here was to apply a factor. And a factor is, in essence, to try to spread those resources while getting resources into everyone's hands. We did this a little bit differently this year. We focused on what we're describing as a progressive factor. And the progressive factor is designed to sort of give a higher factor to lower payments up to a certain amount. So for the first $2,000 of a payment, you would get 100%, and then it would go down proportionally thereafter. An important thing to remember about that is that 82% of our producers, we're anticipating that this is going to provide assistance to about 206,000. So 82% or roughly 170,000 people are going to receive a better payment under this progressive factoring plan than they would under a flat factor. And that's important because we're able to get more resources into some of those smaller operations proportionally than they might have had otherwise. So we think that that is a good enhancement as well. So I don't know if that helps, but that's kind of the quick summary. I'm glad to answer any additional questions that you've got, but we're very excited to finally get this out. It's been a long time coming, and a lot of people have been clamoring for it. And it just took a little while to design, but here we are. And people are coming in droves. We get reports every day, and I anticipate that we'll be seeing a lot more people as the fall turns into winter.
John, a couple of things here and see if we can tie both of these together. But sure. This will be something that we can actually go to the county office and actually meet with the staff there. Is that something that needs to be an appointment? And the second part of this, is there an application deadline yet?
There is. So as of right now, there is no application deadline, and I don't anticipate that there will be for some time. In terms of needing an appointment, no. I think that folks can go in. Part of the hope here was in getting this announced early, even prior to the pre-filled applications going out, was to ensure that people knew that they could just come into the office, meet with their local county staff, and have a discussion with them so that they could pull up their records and see what information was there. That has been how we've had all these folks get signed up thus far. I mean, the program's really only been open for about a day and a half, and as of this morning, I think we've had 3,000 applications filed, and we've already got payments in the system to be paid out. So it moves pretty quickly if you get into the office. If you'd like to wait and have the paper in your hand to go in and ask questions about, that's perfectly acceptable as well. Those pre-filled applications are going to start hitting people's mailboxes next week.
Okay. If we want to find out more before we actually get to the county office, is there something we can find online? And if so, what would that address be?
About the best resource we've got, and it's a good one, and I don't say that lightly, is farmers.gov. You go into farmers.gov, you can find out information not only about this program, but about our whole suite of programs that are available for a variety of different needs. But this is there. And I would certainly encourage people to go on there and make a list of any questions that they've got, and we'll get them answered for them.
Again, the website, farmers.gov, farmers.gov. John Burge is Acting Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs with the Farm Service Agency at USDA on today's Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, John Burge, Acting Deputy Administrator for FSA.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Learn more about ERP 22 online, farmers.gov.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
What might the El Nino climate pattern expected to dominate this winter's weather in our country mean from an agricultural standpoint? USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey starts with western water supplies for irrigation, where water storage was boosted by last winter's significant precipitation accumulation. However,
some of the biggest reservoirs, especially those in the Colorado River Basin and in the Rio Grande, remain critically low following a generation of drought going back 20 to 25 years or more.
And El Nino could lead to drier than normal conditions in parts of the Pacific Northwest.
We'll have to keep an eye on the Columbia River Basin and some of the smaller waterways in the Northwest for potential signs of developing drought or intensifying drought.
El Nino is also expected to lend itself to favorable conditions for winter wheat and livestock for most of the country this winter. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.